thanks for tuning in this day after Labor. Is this the day after Labor? It is the day after Labor Day. Yeah, my ass is still sore from horseback riding. We went up to, really is. Oh, actually not my ass, my lower back. We went up to the North Georgia Mountains to, which is not that far from where we live, to get out of the city, as they say. Went up and stayed in a cabin in the woods, and then took some of the kids and went horseback riding. Spent the day in the saddle riding trails and no trails. Nobody got thrown. It was my grandson's first time, and granddaughter, first time on horses. They did real well. It was Molly's, I don't know, 10th time. She came, you know, Molly's sick. She kept turning around saying to her niece and nephew, well, come on, make him trot. So anyway, it's just, for those of you who ride, and I know a lot of you do or used to, some of us are getting too damn old now, but you know, when you go out for most of the day, and I'm not talking most of the day, I'm talking about maybe 4.5 hours, but you go out and ride, your back and your butt, and you get kind of sore. It's great fun and it's cheap. So that's what we did on Labor Day. The only thing I have about Labor Day is a letter from Michael Moore that I'll get to later tonight. Also, I got the damnedest email from Bob Alexander. And I'm really trying to decide whether or not to read it the way we used to, on the air, the way we used to do his moments with Bob. I don't know about this one. This one is so incredibly personal. I don't know. See, we're delayed in Seattle, so I don't know unless Bob's listening on the internets. If he is listening on the internet, send me an email and tell me if you really want me to read this on the air. This is weird. Also, our education affairs correspondent, Kay Petrini, has something in here. A couple of things from our military affairs correspondent, Sharon Gordy. Who else? Just too much stuff. But anyway, we'll try to get to it. The messages are all over. Oh, also, Chase Whiteside. Eric Stoll from New Left Media. They've got a new video. This is the B-roll of from the Beckapalooza, where they interview people. You heard the A-roll. This is the B-roll. We got about 4 or 5 sound bites that you got. Oh, my God. Why am I laughing? All over the mass media. The Republicans are in the ascendancy. The Democrats are going down, down, down in November. Ah! All the bad poll numbers on the Democrats show how effective the right-wing hostility to getting anything done really has been. This is the weird part of all this. Obama is timid and cowardly as he has turned out to be. With a little bit of help from Republicans, could have accomplished a lot. But the Republicans are only interested in the political aspect of this so-called contest, and they are following the dicta laid out by their predecessors, including and starting with Ronald Reagan, of destroy, kill, end any kind of social welfare safety net, kill it all. They kill the jobs. They're killing this. The only thing these rat bastards want is a strong military where poor people can go fight for corporate America and destroy and capture other people's natural resources. We are in for a rough ride, folks. Anyway, all the bad poll numbers regarding Obama, people don't like him, like he had anything to do with this. like he's the one, right? He's the one that drove all the jobs out of the country. He's the one that got us into 2 wars. And I'm not making apologies for this guy. He's the one that destroyed this and destroyed that. Oh, God damn it, we're going to get rid of him in November. Well, you're not going to get rid of him in November, but you can get rid of the Democrats if you want to, and then put your Republican majorities in. I'm counting on it. I am looking forward to it, even though I know that I will probably wind up in a boxcar being shipped somewhere. But I'll tell you what, before that happens, there could be an awful lot of dead people around my house when they come to get me. But It's just astonishing how the poll numbers show that everybody blames Obama. And again, I'm not making apologies for him. He should have come out smoking. Once he got the election, he said, all right, this stuff is over. No more corporate control. No more corporate stranglehold on our legislative system. No more corporate control on our regulatory system. No more corporate. But, you know, he didn't do that. So between Clinton, George W., and now Barack Obama, these three have absolutely, utterly destroyed the economic base of the United States of America. In the meantime, rising out of the muck and the swill and the toilets and the sewage pumps have come the Republicans, including the Christian right. The teabaggers have taken over the Republican Party. And by God, come November, they are going to be in power. Now, the only firewall we have, of course, is Obama with veto power. But if the Republicans do this right, they can override vetoes. Come on, boys and girls, do it right. Do it right. Kill America. Because the only way that this country, if it has an ice cube's chance in hell of ever reasserting its some sort of ethical leadership, it's going to have to die first. Because the Republicans and the conservatives, and to a lesser degree the Democrats, have so screwed this country into the ground. So let's get it over with. Let's stop this slow, agonizing death spiral. Let's do it! Vote Republican in November! Yes! And then, of course, Obama can veto everything. And then Boehner, who will be, thinks he'll be the new House Republican leader, and Mitch McConnell will be the Senate leader, they can shut down the government. They can just leave, just like Newt Gingrich did back in 95 before he got accused of all kinds of fraud and cheating on his old lady and hanging out with an intern. And wait, that was Clinton. No, that was Newt too, you know. So I say bring it on. I say let's get the damn thing over with. This is a dying empire. Let's put the stake in its heart. Hey, whatever happened to Dick Cheney? Is he still... You know, that is his heartbeat still? You know, he's going to wind up like, what's his name? The Prime Minister of Israel, Ariel Sharon. He's not dead yet either. He isn't. He's been in a permanent vegetative state now for what? When did he have a stroke? 6, 7 years ago? 5 years ago? 4 years ago? I don't know. Time just rips by, doesn't it? So anyway, let's get it over with. Let's just get it over with. So the Democrats, the progressives, the liberals are just saying to hell with it. And I think it's a good idea. To hell with it. Let's let the Republicans do. Now, the only catch here is when the Republicans have majorities in the House and the Senate, then these leechy sons of bitches on Wall Street, these capitalist bastards, will then start freeing up money so that a few people, more than what we have employed now, will get jobs. They'll start easing their private sector. They're just squeezing this down. Capitalist America is as tight as they can to the ground, just shutting off the water, the oxygen, the blood, the flow of anything decent and good in this country. Capitalist America is screwing it into the ground, waiting until the American public, in its abysmal ignorance, we are all dumber than a sack of doorknobs. Well, not you and not me, but you know what I'm talking about. Until we go ahead and say, all right, I've had it with this Barack Obama. I've had it with having someone like, you know, him running the country. Out of here with these Democrats. Bring it on. Bring it on. Let's just get this over with.
truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. While I certainly do, in a very sick, twisted way, advocate the complete takeover of the government as far as possible in this election cycle by the Republicans. Like I said, let's get this over with. You know which direction this country's heading. All the polls tell you that. And, of course, Barack Obama has not a damn thing to do with it, except for his inaction, his inability to stand up to these filthy Republicans and kick them right in the groin and say, you know, figuratively speaking, or maybe literally, and just say, no, the country's not going to fail. I'm going to lead us out of this. Well, he didn't do that, and I don't think he can. So if Barack Obama can't do it, I mean, who can? Who? Can I see some hands? Huh? No? Nobody? Okay. Glenn Beck. So if nobody can lead us out of the morass that the Republicans have spent 30 years putting us into, they want to destroy the country. And they are succeeding. So let's go ahead and destroy it. I mean, you don't have to do anything. I don't have to do anything. Let's just stand back. Let the Republicans take over. And let's watch what happens. When the country then collapses in on itself, then maybe we can begin a rebuilding process. Look at the countries after World War II that were literally collapsed by Allied bombing and nuclear bombs and destruction and death and firestorms and just utter chaos. Look at all of Europe's capitals, cities in the South Pacific, in Asia, that were utterly destroyed. And, you know, it took 15, 20 years, and they built themselves back with a more socialist, some of them, socialist underpinning, and made it back. So that's what we need here. If we can do it without all the bombing and the firestorms and the death and the destruction, let's just do it politically this time, right? So the masses, according to all this polling, and don't these anchor people on television just, I mean, you can see them drooling, all of them, when the political reporters sit down with the anchor guy or gal and says, okay, well, let me show you this chart. Now, you'll notice here that Barack Obama's numbers are in the toilet. So are the Democrats. Of course, so are the Republicans. But when we ask registered voters who they're going to vote for, by a margin of 100,006 to nothing, they're all going to vote Republican. Good. Do it. The masses are going Republican in November. Brilliant. Brilliant! More destruction! If they're so concerned, these dumbass masses, why don't they just reverse it? How could we have been so stupid, this country, to allow Republicans to do this and then vote in more Republicans? Why not just give the Democrats, like, massive majorities? And because Democrats always, historically, have pulled the country's cojones out of the fire. That's not going to happen this time, though. So I say let it rot. The Christians and the right-wing politicians want war. They want endless war. I will guarantee you that when we get our next Republican president, which will be in January 2013, within 6 months, we will be at war. It will be a massive war. It will be a bloody, horrific war. But this is what right-wing Christians and right-wing politicians want. And the enemy? Yeah, of course, the Muslims. You know, not a single Republican leader has condemned what this freakish Spider-Man-looking scumsucker, or this little outhouse of a church down in Gainesville is planning for Saturday. We'll talk more about that, I think, later on tonight. But not a single Republican leader has condemned the Quran burning. Even though General David Petraeus is more or less, you know, a four-star general in a combat zone. I don't support the combat. I don't support the general. I'm just saying. A four-star general in a combat zone has to have a press conference where he addresses some turd little freak down in Gainesville, Florida, with an outhouse kind of church with 50 families, and this freak is going to cause American soldiers to die? Where are the Republican leaders who are supposed to say, well, whatever the generals say, that's what we ought to do? Bring it on. Let's just get this agony over. Okay? I think everybody knows that the Republican game plan for this country has, in fact, reached a tipping point months ago. Probably with the Bush tax cuts back in 2001. Was it 2001? That was the tipping point. And we have been sliding into fiscal hell, cultural hell, literal hell, if you want to get right down to it, what these Christian freaks believe, environmental hell, global hell. So rather than drag this out, you know, I mean, this is survival of the fittest, not the strongest, but the fittest. Whoever can fit in to the new world order, as George Herbert Walker Bush talked about it, whoever can fit in, some of us will get through this, and then we will rebuild what the Republicans, for the most part, and a few Democrats, have absolutely and utterly crashed against a brick wall at 1,000 miles an hour. When we come back, New Left Media!
Got my old lurf wearing a mask and gloves to get a mail. I know an older guy that lost 12 close peeps on 911. It's a serious business by Tom Bush is done.
To border and coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
Yeah, 25 before the hour. All right, New Left Media has the new video on YouTube. These are the guys who interviewed the Beckathon attendees about their views last week. God. Chase Whiteside conducting the interviews. Eric Stoll manning the camera. Both these guys are currently students at Wright State University in Dayton, Ohio. First one, Chase asks some of these Beck people, what are some of the issues or actions you'd like to see Congress do or stop doing?
What are some of the issues you'd like to see Senate or Congress act on, if given the chance?
Stop acting on any of them. They're overstepping their boundaries. It's for the states to decide.
What would you like to see them? What would you like to see the federal government stop doing?
Obamacare, cap and trade, immigration, picking over banks, car companies, just totally ruining our economy.
Yeah.
Now, what are some of your concerns with cap and trade, as an example?
It's a hoax.
How's that? Explain it to me.
Explain it to me. It's just a way of people making money. I just don't believe in that God would let us destroy the earth with CO2. God. We exhale CO2. So, you know, that doesn't make a bit of sense.
Yeah. Are there specific examples of areas you want to see change?
First of all, we have killed over 50 million innocent Americans, the unborn.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And just think, if we had those 50 million here, maybe the Social Security wouldn't be in such a mess right now. You know what I'm saying? We're running out of money out of there.
I think duty has gone by the wayside, and it's more about they want to make a career. I mean, how many politicians have gotten wealthy by being politicians?
Yeah.
That's not right. I mean,
do you think that Sarah Palin's gotten wealthy by being a politician?
No, I think she's probably gained. I mean, she's made some gains by getting into the public eye because, I mean, 4 years ago, who would have cared about a book by Sarah Palin?
Yeah, these poor, dumb bastards. They're rich before they run for office, lady. They really are. As far as Sarah Palin, how much she's made? 16, 18 million in the past year? It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. But these are kind of fun to hear this gross ignorance. Here's number two. Another brain dead attendee explained how if he disagrees with Obama, he's accused of being a racist.
To criticize the current head of the administration about anything, you get screamed at for being a racist. There are black rappers that say the word If I go to Chicago and I say that, I will get shot.
Do you think that's what people are saying? They're saying that if you disagree with Obama, you're necessarily a racist?
I've been called a racist for that very reason.
Might it have been because you used the N-word?
Oh, I have never used the N-word on television before now, and 99% of my life, I make a point of avoiding it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a word that
it's
should...
It's that other 1% that gets you.
Yeah, Chase, that's right. The other 1%. Attendees explained to Chase that they are attending this Restoring Honor rally to stop the government from, oh, you know.
We're not allowed to have our opinions, and that's wrong. I am an American citizen. This man right here is an American citizen. You are an American citizen. We are allowed to have our rights, and nobody can stand and say that what we believe is wrong. That's not what we were founded on. Tell them to go read the Declaration of Independence. Tell them to go read all those documents that the founding fathers...
But people can disagree.
They're allowed to disagree. That's fine. But don't step on my toes. I'm not going to step on yours. Don't step on mine.
And how do you think some of that's been going on? How do you think people have been stepping on your toes?
By infringing on my rights to speak as I will. Or as I believe.
But how's that happening?
You're getting me up in a row is what you're doing.
How's that? Why's that?
Because you keep asking me the same questions over and over and again.
I'm just curious, why it is you believe the things you do, or why it is you know what?
I was raised a Christian.
Yeah.
I go to a Baptist church, a very nice Baptist church.
Uh-huh.
I believe in Jesus Christ. Yeah. I believe the man died for my sins.
Yeah.
I believe he sits on the right hand of God.
But I'm wondering why you believe that your rights are being infringed on.
When I can't stand or sit here and tell you about Jesus Christ and how he died for your sins.
You just did.
And how somebody's going to come up to me and tell me that I'm wrong and that God does not exist.
It's infringing on your rights. I mean, you're allowed to say those things.
That's right. But when they start doing it, that's infringing on my rights.
It's time for all the denominations in the churches to get together. It's time for all the non-denominational churches to get together and quit their bickering.
Do you think there's a danger to having Christians be as divided as they are?
Yes, there is. United we stand and divided we fall.
Ooh.
It's that simple.
Oh, my God. Yeah, the lady who is not allowed to talk about her Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, she's not allowed to, because when she does, immediately the troops show up and riddle her body with bullets. Chase then asked Beckhead if he knew who funds Americans for Prosperity. That's one of those organizations funded by the Koch brothers. Chase pronounces it Koch or Koch, I think. But listen to this.
Do you know who funds Americans for Prosperity?
Americans who are part of Americans for Prosperity. You know, moms and dads. And I'm not a mom or a dad. I'm not married, but I'm just a guy with a job in North Carolina.
Do you know it's primarily funded by two oil billionaires, brothers?
This is the first time I've ever heard that.
Yeah.
Who are they?
Yeah. I think they're the Koch brothers. I'm not positively sure how you pronounce their last name, but they're just huge profile in this month's New Yorker all about this organization and where its funding came from.
All right.
All right. Yeah, all right. Can I go back to sleep now? Finally, Chase asks some of these flatliners how to accomplish Beck's goal of restoring honor to America.
When do you think we've lost honor? Like, what honor are we restoring, I should say?
Well, we've lost honor several years back, actually, probably with the inception of Social Security was one of the milestones.
There is no more honor within the media. Look at this. I cannot guesstimate, but I would say this is the largest crowd I have ever been in my life. And you're talking to someone who's been to some rock concerts in her day, you know? And now the media has to see we have a voice. You can't ignore the voice of the people, the voice of the American people.
Yeah.
Do you think there are good examples of media, people who are doing their jobs and getting the message out correctly?
Few. too. I think there's going to... Oh, wait a minute. Those young, that young gentleman who exposed the Acorn scandal.
Oh, James O'Keefe.
Yes, James O'Keefe.
Yeah.
That, I am so proud of that.
Now, now on the left, they're saying that he's misconstrued the editing and things of those videos.
Well, of course the left are going to say that. Please.
Yeah.
It was just... I found it...
So you think it's unfair to be criticizing him for that?
Well, freedom of speech. You can say whatever you want.
Right.
Say whatever you want.
Yeah.
But that young boy exposed the entire Acorn scandal when you have journalists earning, I don't know exactly how much, of course,
right.
Journalists being paid very handsomely who couldn't do the job
right.
of a young, like a gentleman like yourself.
Sure.
I loved it. Loved it, loved it.
Well, any other final thoughts just about, you know, why you came out today and going into November?
I would love this country to go back to September 12th, 13th, 14th, and how we felt after 9/11, how everybody hung out their flag and
were we like a sort of a scared country then?
Direction.
I mean, weren't we the day after September 11th? Weren't we a scared, afraid country? I mean, confused.
I was afraid, but I'm more afraid now. I am more afraid now.
Yeah. What is it that? Never mind. I'm afraid. I'm scared, too. I'm a scared, too, but I'm a scared of people like her, honest to God. All right, more of the attendees to Beccapalooza and how thrillingly well-informed and smart and ready to commit to... saving the Republic, they really are. We will probably post this, the B-roll of Chase and Eric's interviews from New Left Media. These guys are really good. Really, really, really good. I don't know how they manage to continue to get these freaks to talk. You know, if I had the video camera and I walked up to people at Beccapalooza, I don't know. I don't know what I would actually say. It would probably be a string of profanities. And then I'd have to fight them, I guess. I don't know. Thank goodness for people like Chase and Eric. We'll be back. Stay with us. For the hour. So the Republican agenda is pretty much out there. They have settled on a campaign strategy this election cycle, pledging to defund health care reform if they get their power back in Congress. In saying that, you might say it is a kind of a sneak preview of what's going to happen. At TPM, Talking Points Memo, the Christina Bellantoni wrote this. She quotes AFL-CIO President Richard Trumka, who says he thinks the Republicans are hinting at shutting down everything with their promise to defund everything. Trumka said, quote, they want to shrink it, government, to where it doesn't work. And then when it doesn't work, they go, look, it doesn't work. Get rid of it. And that's been their strategy all along. Trumka said they don't talk about how to make things effective. They talk about how to get rid of them. End quote. Richard Trumka. And as Talking Points memo says, the push to shut down the government that Dick Morris floated to conservatives last week is picking up some steam. Democrats who experienced the shutdown in 1995 and 1996 told Talking Points memo it was disastrous and it would be un-American to force people to endure another government shutdown. What? Disastrous, un-American? What? No. This is, look, the Republicans, the people who are going to go vote for Republicans have been so convinced that, first of all, Obama is Satan and, government funding is the problem with, that's why they don't have jobs. That's why the air is getting filthy and dirty. That's, you know, it's Obama's fault, see? So the way to cure this is to get rid of Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. If we get rid of Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid, oh boy, things are gonna just be groovy! No more health care, no more Social Security, no more Medicare, no more Medicaid, no more national highways, no more bridges, dams, national parks, shut it all down! No more public education in these government schools. School your children at home. Start with the Bible. The B-A-H-B-L-E. The Bible. Start there. Everything you need to know is in the Bible. This is madness, of course. This is what a national nervous breakdown looks like. Was it Sinclair Lewis who said, when fascism comes to America, it'll be wrapped in American flag and holding the Bible or something like that. So here we are. Who'd have thunk it? Who'd have thunk it would happen in your and my lifetime? But the people who are, by God, they'll show that African in the White House. They'll show that Libyan. Or what is he? He's not from Libya. He's that Hawaiian. Yeah, he's Hawaiian. He's not American. We'll show, what, Kenya? Oh, we'll show that Kenyan in the White House. We'll show him. That's what they're going to do. And in doing that, in putting Republican majorities back in, they're going to cut everybody's throat. And that's sad. No more health care for kids. You know, like here in Georgia, it's called Peach Care. It's for children whose parents, for whatever reason, doesn't make any difference. Their parents may be junkies, but their parents, more than likely than being junkies, are probably unemployed because of Republican policies. But children who desperately need medical care? Nah. Screw that. No more. Hey, look, if you can't... Hey, health care is not a guarantee. It's not a right. It's a privilege. If you can't be like me, I've got Medicare. Oh, what? You're going to take my... No, they went to... No more Peach Care. No more... The children's health plans, SCHIP, all over the country, it's all gone. When the Republicans take over, no more funding for anything. All there will be is tax cuts. That's it. Hey, hot damn, Mike, well, I'm happy about that. No more taxes? I don't have anybody. That's right. No more taxes. No more garbage pickup. What are you going to do? I'll turn over to private contractors. And how are you going to pay for it? Glenn, how are we going to pay for garbage pickup? And what about your water supply? What are you going to do? Well, see, it comes to you from your city, your county, or if you have a well, it's all free, right? What are you going to do about water? Private contractors. Okay, and when they start charging you like the cable companies charge you, what are you going to do? You're just trying to get me pissed off, ain't you, Mr. By God Malloy? So here we go. And again, rather than keep Mickey Mousing around rather than keep, you know, oh, gee, who's going to be our next Democratic savior? There are no Democratic Party saviors. They don't exist. Republicans have turned into fanged and voracious animals who want to destroy everything, and they will. And the Democrats, of course, have turned into cowards, whining, whimpering cowards, led by the most cowardly man, I think, who's occupied the White House since George W. Bush, and that would be Barack Obama, who had a chance. He had a mandate. The people of America said, okay, clean house. And what did he do? Right. Figured out we're not video streaming tonight. So defund the government. That is all these teabag Republicans want to get elected so that they can do what? I mean, what is the function of the representative in the U.S. House except to take care of, in the most literal sense, the district back home, right? What is the function of a senator? The function of a senator is to make sure that the representatives from the districts back home don't get too crazy. So I guess what the Republicans are going to do, they're all going to get elected, they're going to have these majorities, and then they're going to do what? Are they going to fire themselves? Are they going to? Senate nominee Joe Miller, Republican, Alaska, the guy that defeated Murkowski, explained in a recent interview on Fox Business Network that defunding is the only option since President Obama would just veto a bill repealing health care. But he went a step farther, linking defunding to a government shutdown. Miller, so defund everything. Get rid of the socialist aspects of government, not just in health care, but the other entitlement areas that are driving us into insolvency. Host, of course, you're going to have a president who's going to veto anything if there's a Republican Congress that the Republican Congress tries to enact. Joe Miller. Well, you got to fund it, and the Congress has to have an affirmative vote to do it. So that's a good start point. Host. So starve them of the funds, starve the beast, so to speak. Joe Miller. Absolutely. And have the courage to shut down the government if we have to. You stupid son of a bitch. Every one of these people. I mean, this is your future. This is your future. And like I say, it's my future too, by the way. And like I say, bring it on. All the people out there who are on SSI, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, kiss it goodbye. Seriously, kiss it goodbye. Anyone who relies, all the federal retirees, like Sharon Angle, the one who's trying to unseat Harry Reid. Sharon Angle's husband is on he used to work for the U.S. Forest Service. He gets a federal retirement package plus Medicare. Sharon Angle's husband, right? This crazy coot from Nevada. the Republican teabag woman. Her husband is sucking at the public trough, and that's what Sharon Angle lives off of. She doesn't have a job. She has nothing. But the hypocrisy is so thick, you might as well just walk on it and ignore it, because nobody pays any attention to it. Nobody pays a damn bit of attention to it. So Sharon Angle's husband, unless she figures out a scam, I guess she figures if she gets elected, then she'll have that nice health insurance provided to representatives, whether they're senators or members of the House, and that covers family members. So Sharon will be okay. But what Sharon Angle and the rest of the baggers, which means the rest of the Republican Party, what they want to do is take it all away, defund all of it. All of it's gone. So I'll tell you what, and that's just a starting point. Now, of course, the hypocrisy, like I said, is so deep you could walk on it, and you might as well. The military, oh no! Keep the military funding going, the trillions of dollars that are going there. Public education, defund it. These baggers want to get rid of, don't forget, they want to get rid of the Department of Education. They want to get rid of any kind of public health, CDC, all of that stuff. Get rid of it. That's just unnecessary funding. Besides the CDC, about 15 years ago, they tried to do a study that showed gun deaths were very similar to any type of disease that caused death. They did epidemiological studies on the use of firearms to kill people in America. And the right wing immediately, I think it was back in the days of Newt Gingrich, they started screaming about taking away all money from the CDC. So the National Institute of Health, National Institute of Mental Health, CDC, any kind of public response to health crises, gone. Forget about it.
Well, if you stay healthy, you dumb bastard, you don't need the government.
Emergency responders. Now, where does that money come from? Didn't the Obama administration recently gouge out $30 billion from someplace to send to the states to pay for, you know, public ambulance drivers and EMS people? Gone! Gone! Starve the beast! Okay, let's get it on. All the people who go to charity hospitals for dialysis or have children who are getting treatment for cancer? No, no! Stop it! Okay. This is what the Republicans want to do. Now, I'm not saying the Democrats are a great alternative, but you right-wing bastards, you better understand what you're doing, because when this all comes to pass, and I think most Democrats are just going to step out of this next election cycle. We've kind of had enough, I guess. So when you get all this power, boys and girls, remember what's going to happen when everything collapses. The rest of the country is going to come looking for you. And there will be, I'm afraid that there's going to be some really nasty times ahead for Americans of all flavors. Now, anytime you have this kind of craziness, you have this retrenching into fundamentalist crazy religion. This is always the last refuge of real scoundrels is religion, but it's also the last refuge of people who think the aliens are coming. Remember those, some of you are old enough, I don't know, some of you are old enough, remember the invasion from outer space movies back in the 50s and 60s, right? And where did people always go? Remember War of the Worlds? When these things started coming down the main street, where'd everybody, they go to the churches, right? Oh, that's good. That's a good idea. Of course, the churches collapse on them, and they all die inside the church, but I guess that means something. So that's the last refuge of scoundrels, and people are scared out of their gourds. Run to the church. Never the synagogue, never the mosque. Run to the church. Okay, run to the church. Now, what has happened to the Christian church? The Christian church is on jihad against the Muslims. Christians must have enemies. Without enemies, their church doesn't exist. They must have enemies. They have to have enemies. The Christian church also happens to be the wealthiest institution in the history of the human race, starting with the Catholics. And their huge treasure trove of riches centered in. Anyway, you get my point. You get my point. So, hold on. I mean, find somebody you really like. Gay, straight, man, woman, up, down, left, right, whatever. and hold on. Plus, when things get really rough, it'll give you something to eat. But hold on tight, because the Republicans are coming. They're coming. They're coming to take you away. The Republicans are coming to save America. And it's just like the soldiers in Vietnam who had to save the village by utterly, absolutely destroying it. Set the damn thing on fire, burn it to the ground. And that way we save the village from those dirty, filthy commies. So anyway, it's going to be rough. I hope you're strong enough to put up with it. I hope you've been doing what Prairie 2 has been advising people on this program for, what, 2-3 years now. Buy canned goods or freeze-dried. So you can feed a family of four for a year for about $2,900 if you buy the freeze-dried stuff. Of course, the only problem is finding a way to heat it and hydrate it. That's going to be a bit of a problem. So do both, canned goods and the freeze-dried stuff, because you can use the liquid inside the canned goods to hydrate. Oh, you get the point, right? So that's what the Republicans have planned. And the American people are wanting it every time they do one of these polls. And today, for some reason today, it was all over the place. The polls and the lip-smacking anchor people and the eye-blinking chicks on the Fox News and the dudes on MSNBC and CNN just like, oh, man, oh, look at these numbers. Oh, God, it's going to be horrible. They seem to really love it. For some reason, they think that they're immune? Don't think so, boys and girls.
Rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Letter from Michael Moore to Rahm Emanuel. Dear Rahm Emanuel, happy effing Labor Day. I read this week that according to a new book by Stephen Ratner, your administration's former car czar, during White House meetings about how to save the tens of thousands of jobs that would be lost if GM and Chrysler collapsed, your response was F the UAW. Now, I can't believe you actually said that. Maybe Ratner got confused because you drop a lot of F-bombs. Or maybe your assistant was trying to order lunch and you said to Ratner, F you, and then to your assistant, A&W, no fries. Or maybe you did mean F the UAW. If so, let me give you a little effing lesson. A lesson I happen to know because my effing uncle was in the sit-down strike that founded the effing UAW. Before there were unions, Rob, there was no middle class. Working people didn't get to send their kids to college. Few were able to own their own effing home. Nobody could take an effing day off for a funeral or a sick day, or they might lose their effing job. Then working people organized themselves into unions. The bosses in the companies effing hated that. In fact, they were often overheard to say, F the UAW. That's because the UAW had beaten one of the world's biggest industrial corporations when they won their battle on February 11th, 1937, 44 days after they'd taken over the GM factories in Flint. Inspired by their victory, workers struck almost every other effing industry, and union after union was born. Had World War II not begun and had FDR not died, there would have been an economic revolution that would have given everyone, an effing decent life. Nonetheless, labor unions did create a middle class for the majority. Even companies that didn't have unions were forced to pay at or near union wages in order to attract a workforce. And that middle class built a great country and a good life. You see, Rom, when people earn an effing good wage, they spend it on stuff, which then creates more good-paying jobs. And then the middle class grows effing big. Did you know that back when I was a kid, if you had a parent making a union wage, only one parent had to work, and they were home by 3 or 4 p.m., 5:30 at the latest. We had dinner together. Dad had 4 weeks paid vacation. We all had free health and dental care, and anyone with decent grades went to college, and it didn't effing bankrupt them. And if you ever used the F words, the nuns would straighten you out in ways you don't even want to hear about. Then a Republican fired all the air traffic controllers. A Democrat gave us NAFTA and millions of jobs were moved overseas. Hey, didn't you work in the White House too? F the UAW, baby. Anyway, unions got scared and beaten down. A frat boy became president and, like a drunk out of control, spent all our effing money and our children's money too. F! And now your assistant's grandma has to work at effing McDonald's. Ask her for pictures of what the middle class life used to look like. It was effing cool. I'll bet grandma doesn't say F the UAW. Hey, don't get me wrong, Rom. I effing like you. You single-handedly got the house returned to the Dems in 2006. But you and your boss better do something effing quick to put people back to work. How about making it a crime to take an American job and move it out of the country? In other words, treat it as if it were an effing national treasure, like you would if someone stole the Declaration of Independence out of the National Archives, or some poacher stole eggs out of the nest of an American bald eagle. Or how about arresting some of those Wall Street guys who effing stole our money, the money that ran the American economy? Now that would take some effing guts. And maybe, just maybe, that one act of real guts might save your ass come November 2nd. Oh, I can hear you now. F Michael Moore. No problem. But F the UAW? How about if I just leave off the A and the W? Yours, Michael Moore. He just has a way with words, doesn't he? Huh? Our boy, Michael? All right, when we come back, I've got a couple things here that I'm not sure what to do, because they are they're all good. I may have to wait on Bob Alexander. Well, Kay Petrini's here. Let me see. Boom, 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 boom. I may have to get Kay Petrini's report tomorrow. I've got Bob Alexander's whatever this is. It's pretty scary. And, of course, Prairie 2. Damn! And something by Chris Floyd. What am I going to do? Gabby? What am I going to do? I don't know. I tried praying. I tried... Oh, where's my Vicks vapor rub? Oh, and then this appeals court in Atlanta again rejects racial discrimination claim. Oh, that I'll have to explain that to you by actually getting into the story. I'm not sure. We'll take the next couple of minutes to figure out what in the hell we're going to do here. Okay, stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. If you want kind of a workable idea about what happens when the Republicans take over, take a look at what happened to the Soviet Union when it broke up and the oligarchs took over. Life expectancy for Russian men plummeted. Of course, part of that is because of their alcoholism and smoking. But it's, you know, there are models out there about what it will be like. And, you know, it's creative destruction, let's call it that, you know, as the capitalists do. Creative destruction. Only this time it means a lot of lives. Well, it always means a lot of lives. All right. After much cogitation, we decided to go with a Bob Alexander piece here. I just hope that he sent this to me for publication. Hey, Mike. As Cary Grant said in Arsenic and Old Lace, insanity runs in my family. It practically gallops. Family traditions, lovingly passed down from one generation to the next, guarantee that insanity, if unchallenged, will continue to flourish. What I learned in my grandfather's knee was insanity, for the most part, though excruciatingly mundane, is still mighty lethal. Dinner at my grandparents' began with a short drive over to their apartment. After arriving in pleasantries exchange, my father would lie down on the living room carpet and go to sleep. My mother would volunteer to help out in the kitchen, where she and my grandparents would catch up on family news while they finished making the food. Somebody somewhere always was having something removed, usually a gallbladder. My two sisters and I were stuck in the living room where there was absolutely nothing to do. We couldn't turn the television on because that would wake my father. So we sat in overstuffed chairs and waited for dinner. My grandparents subscribed to the Reader's Digest and kept months and months of back issues neatly stacked under an end table. I'd haul them out and scan through them for jokes in Humor in Uniform and Life in these United States. The humor editor at the Reader's Digest had only one rule for anyone submitting jokes or anecdotes. The material could not in any way, shape, or form be actually funny. While flipping through the magazine for non-existent humor, sometimes an article would pique my interest, so I'd read, "I am Joe's colon," or "I am Joe's cirrhotic liver," while waiting for dinner time. Finally, it was time to eat, so we'd wake up my dad and go sit down around the big table. My grandfather would say grace. My sisters and I were nominally Catholic, and we were used to quick and simple prayer that could be speedily rattled off in under 5 seconds, like, "Bless us, O Lord, and these I guess which you're about to receive from thy bounty through Christ our Lord. Amen." My grandfather's grace was more complicated. It went on for just about ever. By the time he was done, God had been thanked for just about everything imaginable, and both God the Father and his Son had been invited to take a load off, pull up a chair, and join us in devouring this delicious Easter ham, which my grandmother would fret throughout the entire meal. If it was too salty, it was Thanksgiving, she'd worry that the turkey was too dry. She was always right. The ham was always too salty, and the only reason gravy existed was so we could choke down the turkey without having to rotate around the big table, giving the Heimlich maneuver to everyone strangling on desiccated white meat. After polishing off the pies, pumpkin, apple, or mincemeat, we'd stumble back into the living room, and my grandfather would turn on the Zenith TV. The biggest black-and-white television console he could buy had a built-in turntable, an AM-FM radio, and huge speakers on each side. It was as big as a coffin. On Saturday nights, we'd be forced to watch The Lawrence Welk Show. The indescribable tedium of watching the Lennon sisters, Myra and Florin, and the flashy footwork of Bobby Burgess was only broken up by commercials for Geritol or Carter's Little Liver Pills. Geritol was a surefire pick-me-up for people with tired blood, whatever the hell that was, and who could forget this catchy commercial? "When nature fails, your food may remain undigested, leaving you headachy and irritable. That's when it's time to reach for Carter's Little Liver Pills." Years before, my grandparents drove down to L.A. and went to the Lawrence Welk Show. At the end of the program, Lawrence Welk would invite the audience members to dance, and on that particular night, he picked my grandmother as his dancing partner. My grandmother told that story every single time we watched the show. Every single time. My grandparents were Republicans to the bone. My grandfather wore an American flag lapel pin before they were made in China. They were stout little people who went to church every Sunday, prayed intensely to their God, and hated black people with a passion. By the time the 60s started heating up, they focused most of their hatred on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. because, as they said, he started it all. They truly believed that the war in Vietnam was just. Richard Nixon was a great president, and protesters against the war and the government of the United States were traitors who should be shot. Period. I'm not exaggerating. They were grimly satisfied when the students at Kent State were shot by and killed by the National Guard. They deserved it. In the 80s, they moved to San Diego and found new groups of people to hate. Anyone from any country south of the state of California who happened to be in San Diego. My grandmother died during Ronald Reagan's second term. My grandfather died at the beginning of Clinton's first term. It's too bad they both didn't live to see Fox News. They would have loved it. If cancer and old age hadn't killed them off, they would have been Bush supporters. They would have demanded blood from any Muslim country because of 9/11 and wholeheartedly embraced our illegal wars of aggression in Afghanistan and Iraq. My grandfather would not have cared one whit if a war was fought to steal oil. He was a gas-guzzling Buick man who liked to drive fast. He hated Jimmy Carter for telling us to conserve. Let the other chumps conserve. America didn't get where it deserved to be by putting on the brakes. You stomp on the gas and go. If they were alive today, they would have attended local tea parties and made the trip to D.C. for the Beccapalooza a few weeks ago. In short, my grandparents were of the dominant culture of the United States. They were my first and best examples of crazy, stupid people. They were too stupid to understand they were part of a system dedicated to destroying the planet, and crazy enough to believe it was their God-given right to stomp anyone out of existence that got in the way of the death cult's march to extinction. Their insanity was passed down to my mother the same way my father inherited his. I am now older than my grandfather was when he and I were watching a basketball game on television years and years ago. I can remember with crystalline clarity the racial epithets he used describing the black ball players. Today I can read on the internet the same words written by crazy, stupid people to describe the president. I don't know what lesson is to be learned from all this, except maybe that's progress. Regards, Bob. Yes?
Amateur.
Amateur?
Bob, let me know when you want to go pro. I'll tell you my story.
Oh, you had crazy grandparents?
Well, kinda.
Some night, Catherine, we should do that.
I'll have to charge more.
Yeah, well, that you could do that too. Huh? Steve in Laverne, California writes, Mike,
I'll be back after I get some more Zoloft.
Mike, so Obama wants to infringe on our freedom of speech? Gee, I guess the brain-dead Beck crowd had their empty heads up their butts when Bush was in office. I've lived through quite a few presidents, and I can't remember, until Bush, a more stifling time. It was unpatriotic to criticize Bush. You were siding with the terrorists, or worse, you were a terrorist. Those who did criticize him, especially high-profile people, were immediately pounced upon and had to apologize, which they always dutifully did. I've never seen anything like it. I remember when Cheney shot his hunting buddy, but Cheney didn't apologize. The victim did. It's really been a weird ride. Steve, Laverne, California.
Yeah, what foreign leader was it where Bush went to Europe and met, I think it was one of the summits, G8 or something, and he stood up there like a cocky cowboy, insulting everybody, coming up with nicknames, massaging Angela Merkel from Germany, and then he's got, hey, Prime Minister, hey, you care if I call you a piece of work? You're a piece of work. Okay. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Well, yeah, I think the point Steve was making, and this is lost on these bagger freaks, During the reign of terror, the reign of error of Bush, because the reign of terror hasn't started yet, but the reign of error under Bush and Hart Boy Cheney, during that time, remember, if you wore an anti-Bush T-shirt, you were subject to being ejected from wherever. And that's when First Amendment zones were declared. Now, where were you Second Amendment sons of bitches then when they said, well, if you want to speak, you get over here behind this fence? Where were you, you phony hypocritical punks?
Well, where were they when the University of Chicago students were detained because they went into a post office and asked if they had any stamps that just didn't happen to have American flags on them? And they were detained by the FBI.
Yeah, well, that was then. This is now. Stay with us.
And the carrying signs mostly say, hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Paranoia strikes deep into your life, it will creep.
Ready to make nice, it's Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. All right, coming up next hour, the Little Outhouse Church in Gainesville that is trying to start World War III and probably will. Here in Atlanta, thanks to Adam Liptak at the New York Times for all this. But there's a guy named John, well, not here in Atlanta. His case wound up in Atlanta. John Hithon. John Hithon. Black man spent 13 years working his way into the lower ranks of management at a Tyson Foods chicken plant in Gadsden, Alabama. And trust me on this, folks, you don't ever want to go to a chicken plant, especially not one run by Tyson Foods. Oh. Anyway, Mr. Hithon started out as a live hanger, hoisting 24 squirming birds onto moving metal hooks every minute. Then he moved up to what court records called killing and picking. He was later made a supervisor in charge of eviscerating and deboning. But when two better jobs as shift supervisors opened up, Mr. Hithon was passed over by the plant manager, who is white, in favor of two white candidates from other Tyson plants. Mr. Hithon thought his skin color had something to do with it, and he sued for racial discrimination. As evidence, he testified about the manager's habit of calling black employees boy. Last month, for the third time, and in the face of a 2006 rebuke from the U.S. Supreme Court, the Federal Appeals Court in Atlanta said there were no racial overtones when a white supervisor called an adult black man boy. What? The majority of the appeals court explained, quote, the usages were conversational and non-racial in context. Even if somehow construed as racial, the comments were ambiguous, stray remarks, and therefore were not proof of employment discrimination. Ow! Two Alabama juries had seen things differently. They had heard testimony from another black Tyson worker, Anthony Ash, who recalled sitting in the cafeteria at lunchtime when the plant's manager said, "Boy, you better get going." Mr. Ash said the manager's tone was mean and derogatory. Mr. Ash's wife was there. "He's not a boy," Pam Ash shot back, according to her husband. "He's a man." Mr. Ash testified that the manager, Tom Hatley, just looked at me with a smirk on his face like it was funny. Mr. Ash explained to the jury why the remark stung. He said, "You know, being in the South and everybody knows, being in the South, a white man says boy to a black man, that's an offensive word. Mr. Hithon testified that Mr. Hatley had once summoned him by calling out, "Hey, boy!" Mr. Hatley denied using the term and said he had good reasons for hiring the two white managers that had nothing to do with race. So, in 2002, the first jury awarded Mr. Hithon more than $1 million, but a unanimous three-judge panel of the United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit in 2005 ordered the case retried. And in the process, it made an interesting distinction. The court said, quote, "The use of boy, when modified by a racial classification like black or white, is evidence of discriminatory intent. But the use of boy alone is not evidence of discrimination." So if you call somebody white boy or black boy, that's discrimination. But calling a full-grown black man, a white guy calling that black man boy, nothing there. So the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously reversed that decision, suggesting that the real world was the right modifier. The court said the speaker's meaning may depend on various factors, including context, inflection, tone of voice, local custom, and historical usage. After a second stop at the appeals court, Mr. Hithon's case was retried in 2007. The second jury also ruled for him, again awarding him more than $1 million. The jury had a single black member, by the way. The rest were white. The first jury was overwhelmingly white, too, and both ruled in Mr. Hithon's favor because, you know, when you're white in the South, folks, you know what is meant when you say, and so do black folks, when you say to a black man, "Boy! Come here!" Notwithstanding the nudge from the Supreme Court, a different panel of the 11th Circuit Court overturned the second verdict last month. Yes, sir! The judges had not seen the testimony and so had to infer inflection and tone of voice from a transcript. They probably knew less about local custom and historical usage than the jurors did. But the judges in the majority nonetheless ruled that, quote, "a reasonable jury could not have found race discrimination," end quote. And the court went further, criticizing Mr. Hithon's lawyers for eliciting testimony, likening the word boy to the most charged of racial epithets, the N-word, saying that the lawyer's conduct had been, quote, "highly improper," end quote. You're not supposed to link the N-word with the B-word. That's bad. Mr. U.W. Clement, who was a civil rights lawyer before becoming Alabama's first black federal judge in 1980, said in an interview that the two terms had the same force, the B word and the N word. Mr. Clement, who resigned from the bench last year, said he had followed the Hithon case closely. He added that he knew something about the local custom and historical usage of the word boy, having grown up black in the segregated South. The retired judge said it's the same thing as calling him the N-word. Stephen Bright, president of the Southern Center for Human Rights, said the Atlanta Appeals Court was an outlier among the federal appeals courts, one that is consistently hostile to suits from people claiming racial discrimination. Mr. Hithon's lawyer said they had not decided whether to ask the Supreme Court to hear their case again. And Gary Mickelson, a Tyson Chicken spokesman, said in a statement that the company was, quote, "We're pleased the appeals court has reversed the jury verdict. It is the policy of our company to provide a work environment free of unlawful discrimination, and it's also part of our core values to operate with integrity and be respectful of others. Right, boy?" 7 past the hour. Yeah, we are in the initial stages of the 21st century holy war. I think we all know that. Hey, I was going to mention this last hour, but it got right past me. Remember during Glenn Beck's Praise Jesus rally in D.C.? Remember that? And the hoe from Wasilla, that would be Sarah Palin. And for those of you who need a reminder, the only reason I call her the hoe from Wasilla is because John McCain pimped her to America. He signed her on and pimped her as a way of trying to win the presidency, and it didn't work. So McCain gets obviously reelected to the Senate. The hoe from Wasilla is still hoeing. Anyway, remember when she gave her little Amy Semple McPherson speech about Jesus and God and everything, and she said that she raised a combat veteran, and you can't take that away from me. Remember she talked about her kid? Didn't a judge give that juvenile delinquent a choice? Do I remember something a couple of years ago that Sarah Palin's kid, this one, truck or pickup or toy or snack, whatever the hell his name is, I'm sorry, I just can't remember their names. Didn't the judge give him a choice because he and some of his buds had demolished the interiors of a couple of schools or school buses or whatever it was? I don't know. Target store. I forget because I'm a typical American. I don't retain stuff. I'm not Tom Hartman. You know, I can't, my brain is not a sponge. It's more like a sieve. And this stuff just goes right through. But I seem to remember that the veteran that she raised, as she put, I think she raised a juvenile delinquent. And then a judge said, you have to be in the military or go to jail or pay a fine or something. Wasn't there something about that? Do you remember, Kathy?
Yeah, I think it was some kind of vandalism, but I just wanted to point out that Sarah Palin's new best friend, Dr. Laura, raised a veteran, too.
Oh, yeah. Another one that went nuts, went in the military, and then what did he do? He set up a video game of murder and death and rape and looting and pillage and...
Well, as I understand it, he had a website where he had all these cartoons about decapitating Iraqi women and
killing their babies
children
and
ripping their infants out of their wombs. I mean, it was very, very graphic depictions on his little MySpace page or something.
The military forced him to shut it down or they discharged
him?
Yeah,
well, he got, you know, like a medical discharge.
Oh, did he?
Special discharge. Just for someone special.
Can
like
you
Derek.
Imagine having Sarah Palin or Dr. Laura as your mother? Oh, my God. All right. Well, I just seem to remember that Sarah Palin, when she stands up there and says, I raised a veteran. No, you didn't, baby. You raised a freak. And a judge forced him to go to the military or something like that. I don't know. Maybe I have it all wrong, huh? Speaking of things religion, I told you we were going to get to this hour. So if you want to leave now, you can. The Saturday, this psychopath, this Christian in Gainesville, Florida, has his big event. He went from absolute obscurity, nothing. Nobody ever heard of this guy. This preacher in his name is Terry Jones in Gainesville. It's kind of like Glenn Beck. Nobody ever heard of these people until they publicly display either their craziness, their drunkenness, their psychopathological character, their sociopathologies, their you know, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden, because we are fascinated, and wrongly in my opinion, with head-on car wrecks where lots of people are decapitated and smashed, people like Glenn Beck and Terry Jones and Franklin Graham, whoever it is, George Bush, they rise to prominence in the American, first in American media, because our media loves freaks. We would much rather have stories on the TV about freaks and killers and sickos and the people like Glenn Beck and this Terry Jones than we would about people who are trying to save the planet. Anyone who's trying to save the planet, save the human race, save this, save that, is laughed at. He's considered a freak. when the real freaks are these monsters that crawl out of your worst nightmare. So here's this guy, Terry Jones, right, in this little outhouse of a so-called church down in Gainesville, Florida. 50 members. That's what he has. And look at him! They're having riots in the Muslim world over this psychopath. Well, now General David Petraeus, the top U.S. military commander in Afghanistan, has entered into this this Chinese clustered...
Well, don't say Chinese, Mike. You're being a racist.
Oh, okay. Has entered into this maddening... I can't say the cluster word either. Okay, let me back up. Now, General David Petraeus, the top military commander, U.S. military commander in Afghanistan, has gotten involved in this. He said yesterday that the action by this group of psychopaths in Gainesville will have global ramifications that will jeopardize American troops. Petraeus told the Wall Street Journal, quote, it could endanger troops and it could endanger the overall effort. The overall effort at what, General? The overall effort at our conquering Afghanistan, I guess, and the Muslim world. I mean, everybody involved in this story is crazy. They're all crazy. Petraeus is crazy. He's a madman. He just happens to be a madman with credentials. Whereas Terry Jones, the madman down in Florida, has 50 members in a little outhouse of a church where they sit around and figure out ways to further destroy the message of the historic Jesus and further corrupt whatever little shards of Christianity might remain in their little outhouse of a church. Anyway, hundreds of Afghans protested against what's going to happen in Gainesville on Saturday. Yesterday in Kabul, Afghanistan, they burned American flags and burned an effigy of, oh my goodness, Terry Jones! Huh? Talk about rising from sewer obscurity. This is a guy who lives in a septic tank on a lawn behind an outhouse that calls itself a church in Gainesville, Florida. Now they're burning him in effigy in Kabul, Afghanistan. Wow, Terry. That's even a more meteoric rise than that of your fellow sewer dweller, Glenn Beck.
Ooh.
So on Saturday, they will burn the Quran. Yesterday, they burned an effigy of Terry Jones and American flags. Frankly, Terry Jones ought to put his money where his ass is, get on an airplane, fly to Kabul, step off the plane, walk into downtown Kabul, holding aloft copies of the Christian Bible, and holding, dragging behind him a bag, a burlap sack filled with Qurans. And he ought to go into downtown Kabul, build a big fire. Well, you know the rest of that story, right? But no, he won't do that. He'll stay in Gainesville, Florida, and stick his finger into the eyes of his co-religionists who believe in the same God, the same sky spook, the same avatars, the same nonsense, the same deceit, the same craziness. But this is the fun part of religion. Yeah, I'm being sarcastic. Each religious group wants to annihilate the other. Some of them are more subtle about it, and some of them are less subtle. But Terry Jones, he wants to kill the Muslims. And by doing that, the way to do that, in his twisted mind, is to burn their holy book. Now, that's mild compared to what Terry Jones' philosophy is. Terry Jones' philosophy, forget burning of the book, he believes that you will burn if you don't accept his twisted sense of whatever the hell it is he's selling. I've got some more on this. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Oh, God.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So back to the fun and games scheduled for Saturday, September 11th in Gainesville, Florida, all under the firm, sweaty hand of one Terry Jones, the pastor of a little outhouse of a church called the Dove World Outreach Center. 50 members are going to burn Qurans. Meanwhile, Muslims around the world are just waiting so they can burn Terry Jones or burn American soldiers. And now General David Petraeus, who has no business leading an invading army in a Muslim country, Afghanistan, is saying, oops, don't do this, because if you do this, this is going to cause all kinds of problems. We want the Muslims to lay down, shut up, roll over, let us conquer their country. And this guy, Terry Jones, is making it difficult. The interim director of the Islamic Center of Gainesville, Florida, yes, they have one there, said he was trying to get in contact with the people or the company or the person that owns the property where this little outhouse of a church sits in Gainesville. Jamal Al-Shair said he and other members of the Muslim community met last night to discuss a collective response to the Quran burning. Many Muslims plan to be downtown Gainesville that Saturday, this coming Saturday, to feed the homeless before holding a vigil at roughly the same time that Terry Jones's little outhouse of a church will be burning their holy book 7 miles out in the country. Muslim organizations in the United States, of course, have condemned threats of violence against this freak and his little collection of psychopaths. But, ta-da, some jihadists, that would be holy warriors, have vowed suicide bombings through online posts. Unbelievable stuff, huh? The head of the center in Gainesville, the Muslim center in Gainesville, said, quote, I pray that nothing happens to him. End quote. Oh my God. The guy that said that, the head of the Hoda Center, is Rizwan Mansour. Mansour and his wife, Umna Ashfaq, and other Muslims interviewed said they felt like Jones's church was terrorizing them with the anti-Islam campaign. Ashfaq said her 11-year-old daughter saw the billboard Sunday and was horrified. We don't deserve this, she said. Yeah, they put up a billboard now that on, where is it? Across the street from the Islamic Center on Southwest 13th Street, a billboard advertising, quote, International Burn a Quran Day. Isn't that nice? International Burn a Quran Day. Well, anyway, the Gainesville Police Department, now what can they do? They can't do anything. They really can't. But they're doing something. The Gainesville, Florida Police Department announced yesterday it will hold a driver's license checkpoint Saturday night on the only road that leads to Dove World. The checkpoint for those driving toward the church and the surrounding neighborhoods will run from 5:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. The Quran burning is scheduled to start at 6 and end at 9. Hey, way to go, Gainesville Police Department. A spokeswoman for the police department said traffic will not be closed to anyone and the delay will be minimal, but the checkpoint will be part of, quote, a heightened police presence, end quote, in the area. Officers were at the property earlier in the day after three men from Jacksonville, two of the members of the new Black Panther Party, showed up at Dove World Outreach to give an impromptu news conference and send a message to Pastor Jones. Holding a copy of the Quran, Mikhail Muhammad said if Jones, quote, attempts to burn this Quran, he is going to incite a wrath and chastisement on himself that he will not be able to bear. And all he's going to do is add more division between Muslim and Christian when we should be sitting down at the table to resolve our differences, end quote. Now, another pastor at this little outhouse of a church, Wayne Sapp, S-A-P-P, old Wayne Sapp, came out of the little outhouse of a church to observe what was happening. What's happening out here? He left and came back a few minutes later wearing a different T-shirt. This one, he got rid of the one that said Chew Red Man, and he put one on depicting Arabic writing with the word infidel in parentheses, obviously misspelled. Passers-by gave the Black Panthers, wearing their trademark black braids, thumbs up and support, but the police came after someone called to complain. What? There are Black Panthers out there? Oh, my God, in heaven? Call the police! Later, Pastor Sapp told the Gainesville Sun that neither he nor Pastor Jones would give an interview to the newspaper because the newspaper doesn't, quote,
they don't always put the full story in there. You know, it's just one of them old commie newspaper thing here. I don't know.
While Democrats...
Loud, proud, progressive talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. I hate to talk about such a crappy little topic like... this little outhouse of a church in Gainesville called the Dove Outreach Center International. Excuse me, I'm sorry.
The Dove World Outreach Center.
But it's having an effect now on the lives of Americans being murdered in Afghanistan. Of course, we shouldn't be there. We're over there murdering Muslims, and now this freak in at the Dove Outreach Global World thingy in Gainesville will inspire more Muslims to commit murder against Americans. You see how this goes? It just, you know, and people like the pastor of this little outhouse of a church, Harry Jones, and his
co-religionist Sapp, Reverend Wayne Sapp,
two pastors at a church with 50 people. Wait a minute. Oh, well, it's probably one of those deals where they divide up the married women between these. We had a situation like that here in Atlanta. Great big old church. 10,000-12,000 members. And it doesn't exist anymore. It was big in the 70s and 80s. Doesn't exist anymore because three or four of the preachers, and most of them were related, were divvying up the women who had come into the sanctuary for counseling about their bad marriages. And the different preachers would say, oh, my sister here, let me put my hands, the hands of God, on you.
Do you have to put it there, Reverend?
Yes, that's where God wants me to put my hands.
Reverend?
Yes, sister. That's not your hand. I know, but the Lord wants me to do this, too. Oh, there were lawsuits here in Atlanta. People, there were threats of suicide, all kinds of stuff. But I digress. The Reverend Wayne Sapp and the Reverend Terry Jones. Down there in Gainesville, I tell you, Florida. Are causing Muslims around the world to react. On Monday, in the Afghan capital, an estimated 500 people chanted Long Live Islam and Death to America as they listened to fiery speeches from members of parliament, provincial council deputies, and Islamic clerics who criticized the United States and demanded the withdrawal of foreign troops from their country. Okay, that makes sense to me. Some threw rocks when a U.S. military convoy passed. Well, you know, you get head up and pissed off. You're liable to pick up a rock or a grenade or an IED, right? Now, this is the part that's really scary. While Petraeus and the U.S. Embassy in Kabul have denounced this planned Quran burning by the people at the Dove World Outreach Center, while they've denounced this, people interviewed by the AP said they believe that the whole thing going on at the Dove World Outreach Center has been engineered by the government of the United States. But you boys don't understand. We have a Muslim president who was born in Kenya. Oh, never mind. Abdul Shakur, a student who said he joined the protest in Kabul after hearing neighborhood gossip about the Quran burning, said, quote, "We know this is not just the decision of a church. It is the decision of the president and the entire United States," end quote. Way to go, Reverend Sapp. Way to go, Reverend Jones. Hell yeah. You boys are really something. Other protests have been reported in Pakistan, Indonesia, and Indonesia, the world's largest Muslim country. And CNN reported that in an interview, Terry Jones, the pastor of Dove World Outreach Center, said he would be sorry if people lost their lives over his plan to burn Qurans. But he added, quote, "Sooner or later, we must stand up to Islam." Sooner or later, we must stand up to Islam. Does this freak not know that? Oh, never mind. Jesus God. How do you explain to morons that standing up to Islam or standing up to Christianity or standing up to Judaism has been going on for 20 centuries? Okay. In the case of Islam, it's only been going on for 13. I know. All right. From the Bible, Matthew 5, verses 2 to 10. And he, Jesus, began to teach them, saying, quote, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." And my favorite, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the sons of God." P.S. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Ah, the Beatitudes. You're familiar with those, aren't you, gentle listener, huh? That was the reason I bring it up, especially that line, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God." So someone like this freak, Terry Jones and Pastor Sapp, and what's his name, Franklin Graham, and the rest of these hate-filled sons of bitches, have they never read this? Do they not read their own text? Apparently not. And I would be remiss if I didn't include Luke 6, verses 20 through 26, which also is included under the general heading of the Beatitudes, the blessed speaking of the Christian Savior. Looking at his disciples, he, Jesus, said, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who hunger now, for you will be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. Blessed are you when men hate you, when they exclude you and insult you and reject your name as evil because of the Son of Man. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy, because great is your reward in heaven, for that is how their fathers treated the prophets. But woe to you who are rich, for you have already received your comfort. Woe to you who are well fed now, for you will go hungry. And woe to you who laugh now, for you will mourn and weep. Woe to you when men speak well of you, for that is how their fathers treated the false prophets." All right, that's Sunday school for today. But there is so much in there for that Beck and Franklin Graham
the Reverend Terry Jones of the Dove Outreach Ministry Global thingy in Gainesville should pay attention to. There really is, because if they are really Christians, Christ followers, if they really are or were, which they are not and never will be, but if they were, they would listen to the words of their own Son of God, so designated by them, and pay attention. But none of the religion people, I don't care what their religion is, I really don't, it doesn't matter. None of them listen to or read their own texts, because if they did, they would stop the nonsense and get about the business of bringing peace on earth, goodwill toward men. Remember that? Peace on earth, goodwill toward men. Ow! Okay, never mind. Oh, by the way, Stephen Hawking weighed in. He has a new book out entitled The Grand Design, and it's by Stephen Hawking, co-authored with U.S. physicist Leonard Mlodinow. Is that it? Mlodinow? Hawking says the new series of theories made a creator of the universe redundant. Therefore, God did not create the universe, and the Big Bang was an inevitable consequence of the laws of physics, Stephen Hawking argues. He writes, quote, because there is a law such as gravity, the universe can and will create itself from nothing. Spontaneous creation is the reason there is something rather than nothing. Why the universe exists, why we exist. Spontaneous creation. He goes on. It is not necessary to invoke God to light the blue touch paper and set the universe going. It is not necessary to invoke God to light the blue touch paper and set the universe going. These latest comments suggest that Stephen Hawking has broken away from previous views he might have expressed on religion. Previously, he wrote that the laws of physics meant it was simply not necessary to believe that God had intervened in the Big Bang. In his other opus, Grandis, he wrote A Brief History of Time. He wrote, quote, if we discover a complete theory, it would be the ultimate triumph of human reason, for then we should know the mind of God, end quote. That's what he wrote before, and the book came out years ago. But knowing the mind of God, I don't know why people don't understand, that is a metaphor? I mean, is that so hard to... Oh, never mind. We'll be right back.
It's more Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Don't you just hate it when I do church on this little radio program? Amen. I just can't stand it. I can't help myself, you know? Anyway, Stephen Hawking states emphatically now that God did not create the universe, that the universe created itself, which certainly makes sense. In this, his latest book, he said that back in 1992, when a planet was discovered orbiting another star, you know, a star other than the sun, that discovery helped deconstruct the view of the father of physics, Isaac Newton. Newton's view that the universe could not have arisen out of chaos, but was created by God. Stephen Hawking writes, quote, that makes the coincidences of our planetary conditions, the single sun, the lucky combination of Earth-Sun distance and solar mass, far less remarkable and far less compelling evidence that the Earth was carefully designed just to please us human beings, end quote. His book, The Grand Design, is due to go on sale within the week, I believe. So, Stephen Hawking, the probably one of the five most brilliant minds on Earth ever, has made his declaration. Of course, he will be condemned and sentenced to fiery hell by the fundamentalists in much the same way that Galileo was. To have had the temerity to suggest back in his time that, no, I'm sorry, Mr. Pope, the sun does not revolve around the Earth. It just doesn't. You know how that goes. I've got something that I want to share with you. I may have to wait till tomorrow. Got an email here from Al. Al writes, Mike, I saw a bumper sticker on the way home this afternoon. The bumper sticker said, God bless the troops, especially our snipers. And Al writes, WTF? ! For a moment, Al writes, I thought maybe it was sarcastic. Another anti-war type with a twisted sense of humor. But I doubt it. Even here in the liberal San Francisco Bay Area, well, actually I live 25 or 30 miles from San Francisco, and to speak against the troops is sacrilege. I mean, Al writes, we're being exhorted to especially bless the murderers with their high-tech gun sights, who can kill, and their victims never see death coming. And bringing God into it, even if I believe, depends on the day of the week, bringing God into it, isn't that a nice Christian sentiment? Al. Yeah, that's pretty grim. I've seen a lot of psychopathological Christian and Muslim and Jewish declarations of faith in death and destruction and ethnic cleansing and so on and so forth. But God bless the troops, especially our snipers. That's right up there with the worst that I've ever heard of. God bless the troops, especially our snipers. Thank you, God. Thank you, God, for helping our people put a bullet through the eyeball of some other human being. We thank you. Amen. And amen. What else have we got here? Damn, we're just about out of time. All right, let me close with Diane. Had written this last week, and I didn't get a chance to get to it. Diane wrote, Mike, I live in Arizona, which tells you much about my particular state of mind. We had a debate between our gubernatorial candidates the other evening, and unfortunately, the only one who sounded capable of remotely eager to lead this backward state was the libertarian Barry Hess. You know how Ron Paul makes occasional sense about life and death matters, like the war, and then returns to his crazy anti-government ideology, a requirement, apparently, for libertarians? Jan Brewer appeared, unable to answer charges of false claims about the security of Arizonans, but came across as a fighter who will rid the state and country of Mexicans and Obamacare. You know, these old retired folks and rednecks love that. Facts be damned. Our Green candidate, Larry Guy, seemed to be in need of a B-12 shot, just slightly underwhelming. Our only hope is Terry Goddard, who has thus far refused to be less than a pseudo-Republican. If this isn't enough, you go and tell me about the SS is posing a What? If this isn't enough, you go and tell me about the SS posing a border patrol, posing as border patrol. Come on, folks, do a spell check before you send this stuff to me, okay? I went to the Holocaust Museum in D.C. 3 years ago with my daughter and was dismayed at the mirror into which I was looking as George W. Bush led us to the brink. Alas, a constitutional lawyer at the helm, but wait, he's not progressive. Hell, he's not even that big into the law, really. What's a war crime between comrades, right, Obama? Never fear, we are firming up our retirement plans. After my 96-year-old mother-in-law, whom we care for, passes on to her savior, you know we practice Beck's message of charity. Guess we've earned a spot in the next life as well. At any rate, we will walk away from our home, which is underwater, and will never recover equity. We will rent a cozy one-bedroom apartment and pray we don't outlive the Republican efforts to drain Social Security. Randy Rhodes wants to know why we as a nation take so many antidepressants. Gee, I wonder. Diane. Well, I'm going to leave you thus in an exhausted but satiated state. I'll see you tomorrow. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
So